So I guess somewhere around that 12, 13 mark, and then it happened back in my day, it happened pretty quickly to go from juniors to you know, being a contender in the pros. Now it's much longer journey. Once I think turned 14 to 15, I started to get really comfortable with my height. I started to utilize my serve as a weapon at a really young age. And I played my first pro tournament, 15 and a half. And I never could have imagined that 6 months later, being in the finals in my first US Open as an amateur, I think the last amateur finalist.
What would the Pam Shriver now say to the 16, 17-year-old Pam Shriver if you could coach yourself back then?
I would have told myself to have more of a growth mindset, to be open to changes, the way I felt like Navratilova did a great job, my partner of 10 years. Novak Djokovic in the last 20 some odd years has had this incredible growth, open mindset. And it's something that I kind of look for.
All right, we welcome you, everyone, to another edition of the Tennis Worthy podcast brought to you by the International Tennis Hall of Fame. I am Patrick McEnroe, proud to be the president of the Hall of Fame, and very, very happy to have on someone who has not only done it all, but continues to do it all in the world of tennis, in addition to being one of the all-time great doubles players with Martina Navratilova. She's a Hall of Famer. She's a great singles player. The list goes on and on. The one and only Pam Shriver joining me from the Foro Italico in Rome. So it's nice to have you, Pam. Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick. It's good to chat with you, and it's good to be back in the city that we all know as such a great cornerstone of tennis. And as a player, I only got here once. So it's nice to be here in the coaching role.
So tell me now about what you're doing now, because you've pretty much done it all in the world of tennis, not to mention all the things you're doing for charity out in California, what you've done in your hometown of Baltimore over the years. But what's the coaching hat on now that Pam Shriver's wearing?
Well, it's an innovative program that Yonex, who I played the last 10 years of my career with, and that's a long time ago, and I've stayed in touch with them. And, you know, I started talking to them about 6-8 months ago, right after actually US Open of last year. And it's a pilot program. We're going to see how year one goes. But it's basically leaning to my realization, I think most of people play the game at the high level, that it really is about the mindset. How sort of you practice mindset skills that help your physical skills come to fruition. So I'll tell you a lot more in a few more months, but interesting to have a startup at this stage of my life, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, well, you started your own tennis career as a professional at quite the young age, 16, you reached the US Open final. But I want to go back to even before that, Pam. When did you realize that tennis could be a significant part of your competitive life?
Oh boy, my competitive life. Well, let's see. I fell in love with it at age 5 in Baltimore, Maryland. And I guess maybe I was like 12 or 13. By that point, I had been number one in the state, and I was starting to try to chase down someone by the name of Tracy Austin, which I...
Sounds familiar, yeah.
So I guess somewhere around that 12, 13 mark. And then it happened back in my day. It happened pretty quickly to go from juniors to you know, being a contender in the pros. Now it's much longer journey.
Tell me a little bit about that jump, you know, from 12, 13, because it's only a few years later that you're in the US Open final. How did that come to be within those few years?
I was always a tall kid. I've been a tall adult, and there was some awkward stages where I had to get used to my height. But it was kind of once I think turned 14 to 15, I started to get really comfortable with my height. I started to utilize my serve as a weapon at a really young age. And I played my first pro tournament, 15 and a half. And I never could have imagined that 6 months later, being in the finals in my first US Open as an amateur, I think the last amateur finalist. And, you know, just took the train up from Baltimore. And there I was, along with Chris Evert, last two standing. So that was a kind of a crazy to start to wrap up my rookie year. And then I had to play with some expectations that took a while to digest.
Now, did you get, how did you get into the main draw? Were you a wild card, or had you had your ranking was high enough?
Yeah, I actually grabbed the last seed that year. There were trees in the top 20. My recollection, I was about, this is when we only had 16 seeds.
Right.
And I grabbed the last one. And I remember riding out on the 7 train from the city to Wendy the Rabbit Turnbull into the finals the year before when she was the 12th seed. And she reflected with me on that train ride that she got into the finals as the last seed, the 12th seed. I remember saying, ha, maybe, and this sort of like when you manifest something, I said, maybe the last seed this year will get to the finals again. So it happened 2 years in a row, 77 and 78. And 78, as you well know, in your family, first year that it moved from Forest Hills to Flushing Meadow.
Right. Was quite the transition. I remember it well. I remember going as a little kid to both places, to Forest Hills and running around. And it is incredible when you look at how these tournaments have grown right over the years. And you've seen that happen. What's it like for you, you know, just to transition to Rome since you're there and the clay? You said you only played there once. Obviously, clay wasn't your best surface, but you you did pretty well in doubles on clay. Did well on anything. But what's it like to be back there now, and how have things changed there?
Well, it's fascinating being back because it's also the site of a lot of Olympic stadiums. I believe Rome hosted the Olympic Games in 1960. So, of course, every place you step in Rome, you're stepping around history, whether it's sports history or world history. So I'm only literally, I've been here just over 48 hours. I've had one outstanding dinner. A lot I want to do, but also spend time watching matches. I've become very interesting. I've become a better student of the game in recent years. And I think that's because of the work I did as a coach, whether it was at my kids' middle school or my boys' college recently, or with Donna Vekic for 2.5 years and now in this role. So I'm really enjoying like leaning into, and I know you have a lot of hats in tennis and you like your coaching role as well. And it's fascinating to watch matches through the lens of mindset and see how athletes respond to the pressure points and pressure moments. How do they keep their temper in check when it's at the biggest moments? So, which I didn't always do, but I remember learning a lot from those moments as well.
What would the Pam Shriver now say to the 16, 17-year-old Pam Shriver if you could coach yourself back then?
I would have told myself to have more of a growth mindset, to be open to changes, the way I felt like Navratilova did a great job, my partner of 10 years. Novak Djokovic in the last 20-some-odd years has had this incredible growth, open mindset. And it's something that I kind of look for. And I have a much better, maybe it's because I've been a parent of 3 kids and we have similar situations with our kids, with an older one followed almost immediately by twins. So I wish I had this mindset when I had the body to compete at my best on the tour. And that's something I really want to encourage today's players, is to realize don't wait till it's too late to develop a mindset that can help you be a champion today.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, Martina, Chrissy, Tracy, the era that you played in, and, you know, some of the biggest personalities that we've ever seen in sport and certainly in tennis. But what was it like just to be in the locker room, you know, those years?
Well, it was really incredible because I made my debut in 1978. And a lot of the original 9 in women's tennis were still on the tour. Of course, that great thing happened earlier in the 70s and 73. Equal prize money at the U.S. Open started in 73. So there were a lot of things that happened about 5-6 years before I joined the tour. But I really felt it was important early in my pro career to have a voice in the decision-making. And I totally followed the footsteps of what Billie Jean and then Chrissy and Martina did, which they all three became president of the WTA. Obviously, Billie Jean helped build it along with the other 8 members of the original 9. So I found that really an interesting part. It probably signified that I did have a curious mind, even though I didn't have the growth mindset with my game. I actually had kind of a growth mindset off the court to accept new responsibilities.
Yeah. Well, you've always been very outspoken about many topics, been very, very important topic, particularly around women's tennis. When you see the way the game has changed, you know, men's and women's, but women's particularly over the years, what are you most proud of about your role and what women's tennis stands for today?
Well, I think that's a tough one. I don't know. That's complicated because I think there's so many parts to my almost, 47 years in the game. What am I most proud of? I would say some of the work around safeguarding, I think, has been really important recently. You know, that would be something that I feel like the women's tennis tour needs to have a workplace that feels safe to all women players, whether they're juniors underage or whether they're middle, you know, in the middle of their career or young adults. Like, everybody deserves, in this complicated world of being a traveling professional in the sport of tennis, to feel like their workplace is safe. I would say recently I felt pretty good about that.
There's also, you know, it's nice to see a lot more mothers playing professional tennis, right? Coming back after giving birth. I mean, obviously, Belinda Bencic comes to mind, you know, just as someone fairly recently who's done quite well. That didn't happen as much in your era.
No, it didn't. There were two Australians, of course, Woolagong won Wimbledon in 1980 as a mom. Little did we know it would be until Kim Clijsters won the U.S. Open all those decades later. There was Liz Smiley, somebody really close to me. She was double start mine late in my career.
She carried me to the U.S. Open mixed doubles final when I was just starting out on tour. Yeah,
that's great. And she has one of the most promising golfers in the world.
Right.
So, yeah, Liz, we weren't around babies, but now I noticed that during the 2.5 years I helped Donna Vekic, it's like, whoa, the baby boom. WTA tour, and it's great. And the maternity fund that helps support women when they're off the tour, building their families. And the opportunity, as we've seen Osaka, we've seen Bencic, Svitolina, Serena Williams really was a pioneer, as well as Vika Azarenka. So they're coming in numbers.
All right. So let's get to the red clay. I want to talk a little bit about that, because that's sort of our theme, you know, leading into the French Open. Obviously, Roger Federer being inducted later this year. Mary Carrillo as well, who we both know well. Looking forward to that weekend. But as far as, you know, now that you're in Rome, you're on the red dirt. What are the challenges just generally now? I mean, we know about this. It's slower, and we know for your game style, it was more difficult to get to net. But what do you think has changed the most about clay court tennis since you played and the way it's played now, and particularly on the women's tour?
Well, I think the biggest change is there's fewer clay court specialists, what we would have called back in the day. Now I feel like pretty much everybody feels they have to be good at all the surfaces. And Rome sits in a really important spot, because here it is just on the eve, second major of the year, Roland Garros. And you can see everybody, men and women, just trying to line up their game, get enough reps. Obviously, the men have to lean towards getting ready to play 3 out of 5 and the length of the rallies on the red clay. But the you see the way Sinner's dominating and the way he plays, it's incredible. Like, we never would have seen clay court tennis played that way 20, 30, 40 years ago. And it's really incredible. And you do see a ton of power. I watched a match yesterday where it first round on the women's side, I couldn't believe the power I was seeing on the red clay instead of the topspin. Obviously, you'll see a bit of everything. So I think there is more variety on a clay court than there was back in our day or my day.
Yeah, and they've made the conditions, I think, at the tournaments. You know, grass has gotten a little bit slower, right? Or the bounce is higher. Clay seems like they make the balls a little faster. So you obviously don't play exactly the same way. But to your point, pretty much the same players seem to be dominating across all surfaces, male and female. When you look at the women's field right now, I don't think you could say there's an odds-on favorite. Sabalenka obviously has been the best player. Rybakina has been amazing so far this year, and maybe clay not her favorite surface. Coco having some ups and downs. How would you rate the current field as you look ahead to Roland Garros?
Yeah, I feel that Rybakina and Sabalenka have elevated themselves from 3, 4, and 5 in the world. They're a clear 1 and 2, and Rybakina is trying to chase down Sabalenka, and that's going to be fascinating. And, you know, you have also this great mix of young players. Mboko is, just about everybody's here in Rome. Mboko's a player that I think incredibly talented. I watched her play for the first time in person last year at Roland Garros. And her trajectory is extraordinary. I find there's this great mix in the women's game of young, middle-aged veterans. So it's a pretty fascinating time. Much more of a jump ball right now in the women's game. men's game. And I feel like the storylines, you know, it always goes like this through the years, right? But right now, I feel like the women are climbing on the men as far as rich story.
Yeah, and when you look at some of the American players, you know, Madison Keys had her breakthrough. She's sort of gone down a little bit this year, so she's struggling. You wonder if she can get it back. Obviously, Coco continues to have some of the serving issues and technical issues, but meanwhile, she's still there in the top five. What about Iga Swiatek? Because to me, like, I thought she was going to, like, really dominate. I mean, I know clay's her favorite surface, but what do you think's happened there?
Well, I don't know. I'm not close to that camp at all. She's obviously a major change in the coaching helm just recently. We'll see Francisco Roig, who many people know from helping Rafa Nadal for years. I think it was very smart for her to get some inspiration by going to Rafa's academy. We know how closely she followed Rafa. Iga came on and won her first Roland Garros about 6 years ago. But look, there's a lot of question marks with Iga still. And usually in the middle of the clay court season, there hasn't been question marks. So certainly she's won it so many times, you have to put her. But I don't put her at the same level right now with Sabalenka and Rybakina.
What about on the men's side? Because, you know, you mentioned Sinner. He's been absolutely unbeatable pretty much all year. Did get upset by Djokovic. I know it's crazy to say upset by Djokovic, but it was an upset. And Djokovic actually playing for the first time on the clay in Rome. And with Alcaraz out, Pam, what do you think is going through Djokovic's mind right now?
I think it's going through his mind. He wants to be on Zverev's half at Roland Garros.
Right.
As is everybody else on the men's game, whether you're Arthur Fils, whether you're, you know, it's great to see Fils back, such a charismatic figure. But it's always fun to feel the energy at Roland Garros and how the crowd supports their home players. And no one's going to have as much pressure, I don't think, as Arthur Fils. And he seems to be, I mean, his comeback's been terrific. So, but anyway, I think Djokovic has to look at, you know, it's a chance, right? And it's sort of fun. You have to feel like he's going to be as prepared as possible because that's been his mantra. And he's somebody that I've really looked to every step of his career and thought, wow, he keeps adding something, especially between the ears, but also because of that, he's added elements to his game. And can he hang in there and win on what I think still most people believe is the hardest surface when you're older to win seven matches, three out of five, and that would be clay.
And you mentioned that everyone will be looking at the draw to try to stay away from Sinner. But another a guy I want to ask you about, because he has just announced that this will be his last year, his last French Open, and that is Gael Monfils, who's been a great entertainer for so many years. His wife, Elena Svitolina, certainly someone that could be a factor there as well. But that's going to be pretty emotional, isn't it? I mean, you mentioned Fils, and obviously there'll be a lot of eyes on him from the locals. But that's going to be a pretty emotional moment for Gael Monfils and all the fans there, too.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the French players, particularly on the men's side, the last 4 or 5 years that have retired, and it's something that the French Federation's gotten pretty good at. It's having these amazing retirement ceremonies. I mean, think of what they did for Rafa last year with that ceremony. Before that, it was Sanga on the French side. And it is going to be emotional. I think last year, I remember Monfils winning a nighttime match that just made everybody think, wow, how did he do that? And let's see if he can pull something. I haven't seen him here yet. I've seen his wife. And I love the family version of sports. You know, Patrick, you come from one of the great tennis families, and to just see like husband and wife play some of their best tennis since they got married, the way Gael and Elena Svitolina, it's been great. They did leave their kid at home, which makes it easier to focus, I will say.
Yeah. Well, you know about that too. It's as an amazing mom, amazing family person, all the things you do, you know, to help. I know where you're from in Baltimore. You always go back there, your family. You have family there. But what you've done, I think, in Southern Cal, particularly, I know you were right in the middle of the fires a couple of years ago, and you've continued to give back, and you always post about, you know, the tennis club being rebuilt and reopened. So How has that been like for you? I mean, because I know you pour your heart and soul into pretty much everything you do.
Well, it's interesting because it's been a mindset challenge for the whole community. The devastation, it's just a couple of camps over from my house. Luckily, my property of 24 years, my kid's dad, George Lazenby, I had to get him evacuated very quickly from an assisted living in the heart of the Palisades. The tennis center that you refer to is Palisades Tennis Center, and it's an 8-court gem that's been around for decades and decades. Many of the great Southern California players have played at Palisades Tennis Center. And to see that the devastation still surrounding it, and I'm just trying to raise money to get the court built back, get the clubhouse burned down, trying to get funding for a new clubhouse. So it's complicated, all surrounded by houses that were all destroyed on the boundary of the Palisades Tennis Center. So it's a lot, and people are still living through the trauma of what happened now 17, 18 months ago.
Well, I know a lot of people appreciate all you've done out there, and I know you'll continue to do. All right, I came up with some kind of fun little rapid-fire questions for you, Pam, because as you mentioned, you've been around for a while in competitive tennis. So here we go.
This makes me nervous. So I'm jet
lagged. No, it's kind of fun. I think you'll enjoy
okay.
it.
Okay.
Toughest competitor.
I'll go Chris Evert.
Okay. Smartest player you ever faced.
Oh, smartest. You know what? I'll put Martina Navratilova in the smartest player I ever
okay.
played.
Okay. Interesting.
I played doubles with
her. You played, right, because you're smart because she picked you to play doubles with.
Yeah, that's all right.
Oh, well, actually, leads to my next one. Best doubles instincts ever. And this, by the way, this could be from your era. It could be from, you know, your years broadcasting.
I'll put a modern-day player in here, Sara Errani.
Oh, my goodness. And she never goes to – well, she does go to the net here and there, but the lobs that she uses is incredible.
I'm in Italy. I got to mention her.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Most underrated champion.
Most underrated champion, I would say Stan Wawrinka.
Well, that's a good one. Well, he's going to make his way into the Hall of Fame. I'm pretty certain of that when he finally – well, I guess he's retiring this year. I wonder if he's going to get a while – probably not. They didn't give him one last year, Roland Garros. He'll probably be in the qualies. So we'll
yeah,
see what
I
happens.
Okay.
All right. One current player, male or female, that you'd pay to watch tomorrow. They're paying you to watch him. I know Yonex, but that you pay.
Oh, well, I'll put – sure. No. Yeah, I'd say Novak Djokovic. I'd pay to watch. I mean, any day of the week.
All right, so since you're in Rome, you can't be biased with this next one. Best tennis city in the world?
New York City.
Ah, see? I like that. There you go.
And second place, Newport, Rhode Island. But
Newport,
that's kind of...
Rhode Island. Yes. Well, that's sort of tennis history, right. All right, give us one match that you played that you still think about.
I think about beating Steffi Graf in Madison Square Garden Golden Slam year in the semifinals in front of a packed crowd. And I didn't know it was going to be my last big singles win, but a big singles win was awesome.
There's nothing like the energy in Madison Square Garden. I remember the women's championships there. I remember the men's for so many years. Watching my brother play Borg in a round robin match. I think it was like a Wednesday, Thursday night early. It was just crazy. Unbelievable.
Can I
vibe.
Tell you a funny story?
Sure.
I was just a couple months after getting the U.S. Open final. They asked me to come up and do a little exhibition during the men's Masters. And it was Arthur Ashe and your brother, I think, in the final.
Yes.
Have anybody to warm him up. And he asked me to hit with him. He asked
wow.
me to warm Yeah.
Wow. And he almost won. I think it was 7-6 in the third.
Yeah.
John won.
I was
Amazing.
Still getting the fact that I warmed up Arthur Ashe before the finals of a men's.
That's crazy. That's cool. All right. Two more for you. What are today's players do better than players did in your era?
Power. Much better. Yeah. I would say. Our quotient is just outrageous. When you sit courtside and watch a match, I can't, you know, it looks like a different sport, really, the way it's played.
Right. All right. What about, what did your era do better than they do now?
I think we constructed points better. I think we had, you know, you couldn't rely on the power, so you had to kind of shot placement, get to net, use the net position to disrupt. I think we actually served really well for our generation.
Inside
old serve mentality that I don't see in the women's game the way it was back in our day. So that's some of the things we did better.
Nobody volleys out there today like Pam Shriver volleyed. All right. Final question, and I saved the best for last because of all that you've done, and you're nice enough to make some time for the Tennis Hall of Fame. We appreciate it. So player, broadcaster, mentor, advocate, coach, when people talk about Pam Shriver, let's say in 20 years from now, what do you hope they say mattered most?
I think coach. I have leaned into coach and mentor, and it means a lot. And I feel like in this day and age, as a female, you have a career that can last a little bit longer. So I'll say coach for right now. But I reserve the right to change my mind.
Well, you certainly can do that. I'm gonna lean mentor because you've mentored many of us in many different ways, and you've always been a leader. You've always been outspoken, and the best is yet to come, Pam.
Let's hope so.
One and only Pam Shriver joining us here on the Tennis Worthy podcast. We appreciate it, and we hope to see you in Newport soon.
Thanks, Patrick. I'll be there certainly in the end of August.
Sounds good. Pam Shriver here.